This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. This morning, we consider the challenges colleges and universities are facing as the fall semester approaches during a pandemic.
So we're taking a look at every aspect of the university, everything from what supplies are needed, how we can de-densify our classrooms.
That story, and we also visit Kermit in Mingo County. This is West Virginia Morning. There have been a lot of questions about what public schools in West Virginia will look like in the fall. But there's also quite a few questions about higher education. Colleges and universities have been releasing updates on their websites in recent months about what they're doing to prepare for a return to campus in the fall. But uncertainty remains. Liz McCormick brings us this story.
We let it sit for a few minutes to let the sanitizing solution get in and actually kill the bacteria.
At Shepherd University, Jenny Lind plays two roles, accounting student and a lead campus service worker in Shepherd University's facilities department. As part of facilities, she and her team are responsible for keeping all buildings, classrooms, dormitories, basically the entire campus clean. For workers like Lind, the coronavirus pandemic presented challenges.
We had numerous discussions, and because there was so much uncertainty, especially at first, we didn't know how it could be killed, if it was chemicals or if it was light, UV. We had to understand actually how the virus spread and what we needed to do to actually kill the virus.
Lind says while their cleaning regimen hasn't really changed much, she and her staff are cleaning more often. And she says when students return in the fall, the frequency will ramp up even more. Typically, cleaning staff work after hours. They do their work once people have left a building. But she says that won't be the norm anymore, and her team will be making extra efforts to be seen. And Lind says knowing how much they're doing makes her feel safe to return to in-person classes.
I personally know that everything has been sanitized. I know that the classrooms have been sanitized. I know that the bathrooms have been sanitized, all the touch points. So, yes, I do. I am more confident that it's safe.
But not everyone feels as safe to return to college this fall. In fact, one online petition has received more than 1,000 signatures calling on West Virginia University to cancel all in-person classes this fall and reduce tuition if the school goes entirely online. Across West Virginia, colleges and universities have produced contingency plans to prepare for a return to in-person classes, according to the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission. In all schools, face masks will be required of students, faculty, staff, and visitors. Dormitories, in many cases, will now be single occupancy rooms instead of sharing with another classmate. There will be more grab-and-go style meals with more outdoor dining areas. Staff and students will be required to take their temperature every day, and class sizes have both been reduced, desks spaced out, and many courses are now hybrids, where some instruction will be done in person while some of it will be remote, and many classes will just be online. But there's still concern whether this is enough for students to feel safe enough to return to campuses.
I'm worried that we're going to have a year where, you know, our best minds are not going to college because of fears of the coronavirus.
That's Sarah Armstrong Tucker. She's the chancellor of the Community and Technical College System of West Virginia and the interim chancellor of the Higher Education Policy Commission.
We have real fears about enrollment for the fall. Our family is going to feel safe sending their children to college. Are adults going to feel safe returning to school when, you know, you're in an environment where you're not supposed to be with a group of more than 25 people?
The enrollment concern is a big one for colleges and universities, because if there aren't enough students paying tuition and fees, it's more challenging to meet financial bottom lines. Tucker says it's been a constant collaborative effort with education officials, local health departments, and the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources to prepare for any scenario and make sure campuses are as safe as possible.
We're having discussions about all of it. I think we're probably at about plan S right now for the fall.
According to the HEPC, many of West Virginia's higher education institutions, both 2 and 4 years, are experiencing some lower enrollment numbers for the fall, especially in the case of students at four-year institutions who would typically be looking to live in on-campus housing. Both Marshall University and WVU say that compared to last year, they're seeing a slight decline so far in fall enrollment numbers. WVU says while it's too soon to tell what next year will look like, projections are not as low as the school had predicted they might be when the pandemic started.
One of the most frustrating things about the coronavirus and this pandemic is that there is absolutely nothing concrete. Every time we make a plan, something changes and we have to make another plan.
That's Holly Morgan Fry. She's the Vice President for Student Affairs and the Director of Community Relations at Shepherd University. Fry also leads the Health Task Force at Shepherd, which formed in response to the pandemic.
The majority of our students really want to be back on campus. And we want to be able to do that. And so we're taking a look at every aspect of the university, everything from what supplies are needed, how we can de-densify our classrooms, how we can create pedestrian traffic flows to reduce contact, how we can do an enforcement of the policies that we are creating.
Some colleges and universities, according to the HEPC, will also be requiring coronavirus testing of students, while others are looking at at-risk student testing and screening of specific populations. At Shepherd, Fry says they are considering target testing, such as testing all the athletes if there was an outbreak or an entire dormitory if there was an outbreak there. This week, Governor Jim Justice met with the state's higher education officials to share his specific requests for a safe return to campus in the fall. Justice is calling on all colleges and universities to test out-of-state students for the coronavirus upon returning to campus. He also says he will provide any additional resources for a safe reopening, such as access to the National Guard and the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
It was just 10 years ago, drug companies sent 12 million hydrocodone pills to Kermit, West Virginia, a town of about 350 people. Cars would line up bumper to bumper at one pharmacy with people waiting to pick up pain pills. The so-called pain clinics of a decade ago are gone. In their place, a continued need for addiction treatment and recovery resources. Lawsuits against big pharmaceutical companies continue to bring in settlements. But so far, Kermit hasn't seen any money from the litigation. On the latest episode of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Us and Them, host Trey Kay visits Kermit to see how the town is recovering from the pill-dumping scourge. Many people's lives were devastated by the epidemic. And people like Sister Therese Carew are helping many of them with the difficult work of getting back on their feet. Carew heads the Christian Help there. It's a nonprofit organization that provides resources so that unemployed or underemployed can avoid homelessness. Her operation is located just a stone's throw away from the site of Kermit's infamous high-volume pill distribution pharmacy.
Sister Therese started talking to me about a guy named Michael. He's one of the people who gets support from Christian Help. We're not using his full name because of the stigma of being homeless. He's now sober, but after a string of events, he's found himself living under the bridge in Kermit. For a while earlier this year, Sister Therese and others would give Michael a lunch, knowing that it was probably the only meal that he'd get that day.
How I got to know Michael better was COVID hit, and we sent all our staff home, and by the grace of God, we were able to do it with pay, but until like March 17th to the beginning of June. Well, then we weren't there to be his meal every day, 5 days a week, and it's still freezing cold, and I invited him to eat at my house, which is two blocks from Christian Help, and to get in out of the cold because I didn't want the fire department to tell me they found him frozen under the Kermit Bridge when I knew he lived there. You can't do it. I can't do it. His mom used to come into the store and shop, and she since has just died of physical complications, nothing related to opioids. But Michael's under the bridge because of his opioid addiction.
Hey, Michael. Hey, Michael. I'm Trey Kay from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I was wanting to know if I could come down and talk to you for a second.
Sure,
I guess we'll be fine. Okay. All right. Yeah, it's a kind of steep hill here with a bunch of rocks. You ever get hurt walking down here?
A couple times, especially if you get night.
So, to folks who don't know where we are, tell me where we are.
We're under the Kermit Bridge, right across the river from Kentucky. We're Kermit, West Virginia.
And you got a tent under here?
Yeah. Yeah, I've actually moved up to a tent.
What, did you have something before?
I actually lived up under the, on up under the bridge, up in the rafters kind of. Built me a bed up there during the winter, and I've been here since December 14th. And I built me a bed up there, and I kind of, a friend gave me this tent that's a little cooler down here, closer to the river, and not as many bugs bothering mosquitoes and stuff. It keeps, and I can lock some of my stuff up. I've been robbed down here a couple times, actually. People stealing my food, just ridiculous stuff that you wouldn't think people were capable of, but when people need money for dope or whatever, they'll come and steal whatever they can get from you. I mean, honestly. Rich.
At first, Michael was hesitant to talk to me.
It's just because, every addict, once you're an addict, you're always judged by that. It defines your life. And I don't know, it seems like you can't ever recover no matter what you do. People always judge you by that.
Michael worked in the mines. He would go underground and work on the batteries that kept everything running. He says the work was brutal, physically and mentally taxing. One day, a coworker saw him struggling and gave him a little pill. He told Michael it would help him get through the day. As strange as this may sound, people I've talked to for this story say it happens a lot. That was Michael's first opioid experience, but his addiction came later. He felt ill and went to see a doctor in Kermit.
They didn't see me for any x-rays, any tests, anything whatsoever. Just saying, the nurse practitioner, honestly, I don't know if she was sleepy or high, but she was almost falling off her chair. I have no clue why she wrote the prescription she wrote me.
Michael says the nurse prescribed hydrocodone, and he went to the Save Right Pharmacy in Kermit to pick it up.
And that's the only place you could go pick them up. You didn't have an option to go any other pharmacy. They would call it in, actually. You didn't even get a prescription. They would call it in, and you would just go pick it up, really, without even knowing what you were picking up until you got there.
Michael says the rest is history. When that prescription ran out, he felt worse than he ever had, what he calls dope sick. That was the beginning of his addiction. Since then, Michael has turned things around. He takes Suboxone as a treatment medication. He goes to counseling and passes drug tests. He's doing everything he's supposed to, but he's run into a problem trying to get his life back together. Michael owes back child support payments, and because of that, he can't find housing. It's a vicious cycle. Without an address, Michael struggles to find work. Without a job, he can't pay back child support. And if he has outstanding child support, he can't get housing. I ask Michael if he thinks this area will recover.
I thought it might before this pandemic thing came about, but now coal industry, from what I'm hearing, it had already went downhill drastically. And this area, that's the main source of income. There's no other jobs that pay. I mean, and coal supported everything else around here. We were kind of taking advantage of. I mean, really, so that other people could benefit. And I just hope eventually something can be done about it. I mean, there's just too many people suffered. Too many families have been broken up and too many lives lost. It seems like it's never ending.
We've been listening to an excerpt from the latest episode of our show, Us and Them, titled Recovery and Resiliency in Kermit. To hear the rest of the show, tune into West Virginia Public Broadcasting tonight at 8 p.m. There'll be an encore presentation of this episode this Saturday at 3 p.m. You can also download Us and Them wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at wvpublic.org. This episode of Us and Them is presented with support from the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation and the West Virginia Humanities Council. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director is Andrea Billups. I'm your host and producer, Glennis Ford. This is West Virginia Morning.